Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us for the 10th and final Journal Club webinar of this semester. So a little bit of housekeeping. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, that presentation slides are available to download as a handout. So please use those to follow along. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so type those in the question block so we can moderate those to our presenters. When the webinar ends today, there's a short survey that pops up, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. And then watch for the follow-up email on Wednesday of this week, which will include the recording, the handout, and your CEU certificate. So I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois.
Thank you, Rachel. Today, our presenters are coming to us from High Point University. Dr. Vala is an Assistant Professor in the Nito R. Cubain School of Communication at High Point University. Her research focuses on the diverse educational and health implications of media and marketing in the lives of children and adolescents, as well as the ways that parents, teachers, and caregivers perceive of and make decisions about children's media use. She completed her PhD in communication studies at the Annenberg School of Communications at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Ritter is a career professional turned academic with more than 15 years of combined experience in digital media, public relations and advertising, teaching and research. This includes social media strategy for organizations and individuals, the changing landscape of modern media, and the role of the internet in facilitating new modes of communication. He currently teaches in High Point University's School of Communication. Today, we'll be sharing their paper from the Journal of Nutrition Education Behavior, on child-oriented promotional features and sugar content on U.S. cereal boxes. So I want to thank them both for being here today and sharing their expertise with us. And at this point, I can hand it over to our presenters.
Thanks, Kristen.
Great. Thanks very much, Kristen. So we were just talking about this point of the semester with all the grading that we're doing and how lovely it is to talk with you all about this study that we did on cereal boxes and take a break from the grading. So thanks so much for joining us today. Just a little bit of housekeeping here. Sorry. In terms of disclosures, we did not receive external funding for the study, and we have no conflicts of interest to disclose about the study. These are the nutrition educator competencies that we identified for our discussion today. And at the bottom there, you see the full citation for our paper. And just to kind of set the scene here and get you thinking about this context, these are my daughters. They're 3 and 5. You can see from the masks that this was the first time I ventured back into the grocery store with them in tow. It was in October. And this came to mind as I was getting ready for this webinar, because just as recently as October, I was shopping with them, and the little one, we were over looking at the yogurts, and she saw Frozen, the characters from the Frozen movies, on some of the kind of kid yogurt smoothies, and was so excited and pointed these out to me, and then looked right next to those Frozen yogurts and saw Paw Patrol on the yogurts right next to them, and she said, "Mom, look, there's yogurts for girls and for boys. Can we get some?" And so if you have kids or in this age range or a little older, I'm sure you've had this experience as well, that there are all kinds of messages around the grocery store for kids about luring them to certain foods and products. So with that as a backdrop, Matt and I were drawn to this kind of topic probably in part because both of us are parents with young children, and so we contend with this, what I just described, happening, at least outside of COVID, about every time we go to the grocery store. So we decided we would put together a research study looking at a form of what we call point of sale marketing. the majority of research that's been done on children and marketing examines the nature and effects of television ads, you know, what kind of ads are directed to kids on TV and what kinds of things are they selling and how effective are they. There is prior research on point of sale marketing like ours, which includes, by point of sale marketing, we mean everything displayed in the store itself to promote products. So anything like the end cap promotions, ads around the store, and the packaging of the food items themselves. And in fact, manufacturers actually will pay more for specific placement of their products within the store. So at children's eye level might cost a little bit more, or on an end cap display or something like that. So this is a big deal. And we're especially interested in this form of advertising because it is happening at the very moment when a family is deciding what goes into the cart, right? It's going to lure these kind of ads, kind of promotions, the packages will lure families to buy it right then and there or not. We know, again, from a body of research, prior research, that across different forms of advertising, what we consider to be the fun foods are the ones that are most unhealthy and highly advertised to kids. So they come in fun shapes, they come with fun colors, they come with games and prizes, they're promoted with this aspect of fun, they have fun kid-friendly characters like Frozen and Paw Patrol on them, all meant to be cues to children, perhaps to parents as well, that these products are meant for kids. Many of these kids can't read yet, so these cues are super important. And these fun foods are, again, tend to be more unhealthy. They're cereals, sugary cereals, historically, fast food marketing, sodas, and candy. And I know many of you are nutrition educators, so I don't need to tell you that consumption of those foods, these foods that are most commonly promoted to kids, cereals, candy, sodas, are linked to poor health outcomes and a risk of overweight and obesity. So that kind of sets the stage for why we took on this project in the first place. I'll turn over to Matt for the next slide.
Yeah, so as Sarah mentioned, we are both parents of young kids, and in our household, I've got an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we go through a lot of cereal. My kids are always very quick to notify mom and dad when the cereal cabinet is running low. So we spend a lot of money on cereal in our household. We consume a lot of cereal in our household, and Americans in general eat and consume and purchase a lot of ready-to-eat cereals. In fact, if you look back to some of the recent numbers around how much we spend in this country, $8.5 billion were spent on cereal back in 2018 alone. And if you look at cereals, ready-to-eat cereals are advertised to children more than any other foods. So if they're seeing advertising related to foods in general, it's more often than not going to be involving cereal. So that's another reason why we decided to look at cereal specifically in our research. One of the main issues that I think we often kind of run into when it comes to cereals is the question of, well, what's healthy and what's not healthy? And if you look at ready-to-eat cereals, again, we're consuming and buying a lot of cereal in this country. The sugar content in cereals exceeds the nutritional recommendations of many of the different organizations that track these types of metrics. And other research that we looked at also indicates that children tend to eat more than the recommended amounts of cereal in general. So we spend a lot of money on cereal, we consume a lot of cereal, and cereal in general is high in sugar. So it really became sort of the focal point for our specific research. So I understand that there are some folks on this call who are probably very familiar with some of the information that we're going to go over today. So apologies if you are, if I'm speaking about something that you're more aware of even than we are. But what we wanted to do with our study is we wanted to look at the FDA and analyze serving size. Now, serving sizes for cereal, that's guidance that is set by the Food and Drug Administration. And specifically, the FDA sets what are known as RAC guidelines. And RAC stands for the recommended amount that is customarily consumed. So this is the amount of, specifically in our case, cereal, that is recommended that someone eats in a particular setting. Now, what the research has suggested over the years is that there seems to be some confusion around serving sizes. What is an appropriate serving size for a cereal? It seems like there's not a complete understanding of whether this is a nutritionist recommendation or whether it's a reflection maybe even of what people actually do consume. One thing that we found interesting in our research is that the RAC guideline has actually changed over the years. And if you look back to the 1990s specifically, the RAC guideline was less than what it is now. It's actually been revised here in 2020. So the RAC was increased, the recommended amount that people would customarily consume. And of course, the problem here is that consumers often confuse what they consider to be a single serving and what's listed on the product's nutrition labels. When we sit down and we pour ourselves a bowl of cereal, are we really paying close attention and measuring out 3/4 cup of cereal, or are we simply pouring enough cereal into the bowl in order to feel full at the end of that particular meal? And so there seem to be some potential discrepancies there between what is being recommended and then actual human behavior in terms of what is being consumed.
And just, I don't know if you said this, Matt, but another, you know, aspect that could be confusing is that these are not standard serving sizes, but the racks vary based on the density of the cereals.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get into that a little bit more specifically in the next couple of slides. Sarah, I'm going to turn it back over to you to talk a little bit about your prior work and sort of what served as the impetus for this study.
Yeah, so I've been interested in children and cereal and packaging for a little while now. I did a study with some colleagues a few years ago that kind of takes a different look at this issue. It was when we designed this particular study, this prior study that I did, we called it the Summer of Shrek. I think it was the Shrek's last film, or one in those series. And you can picture how this happens, right? When a big blockbuster film comes out, especially if it's family oriented, the characters appear on everything. Shrek was at McDonald's and on M&Ms and Snickers, but also some health foods. And we were studying children in media and just noticing this happening around us. And so we designed this study based on that inspiration. And we were looking in this prior study at how children's, what we call parasocial relationships with characters, might influence how they actually experience the product itself. Adults too, we develop these kind of one-way relationships called parasocial relationships with media personalities and characters. The idea for using them for product promotion is that a child will kind of, without knowing it, transfer their positive feelings for that character to the product itself. There was already research when we did the study showing these characters, because of that positive association, these characters make kids want to buy the product. They pester their parents when they see Frozen on the yogurt or Paw Patrol. What we are curious about is, do the characters actually kind of trick kids? Do they influence how children think the product tastes, their subjective ratings? So we did some comparisons of whether the packaging had a well-known character on it or not. We were also interested in how kids might, these are preschool children, might make sense of or make decisions based on the way the cereal sounds. So does it sound sweet? You know, the chocolatey, fruity, sugary, sweety kind of cereal names, does that influence how they think it tastes versus health sounding cues in the name? So what we did was we set up an experiment. We had a graphic designer help us make these kind of stickers, these big elaborate stickers that we actually pasted over real cereal boxes. So kids thought, they were 4 to 6 year old children, thought they were looking at real cereal boxes. Each child, I think there were 60 some kids in the study, each child just saw one of our 4 different fake cereal boxes. So either they saw healthy bits or they saw sugar bits, and either they saw just graphics like stars there on the box, or they saw the Happy Feet Penguin, because that movie had just come out. And so we're testing this 2x2 experimental study. All the children actually tasted a few bites of the same dry cereal, which was kind of middle of the road in terms of sugar content. And then they used our child-friendly, you know, happy face scale, to rate how they thought the cereal tasted. So they all taste the same cereal, but see a different box. Here's what we found. So on the left, you see the box with the two boxes with no character on them, Sugar Bits versus Healthy Bits cereal. We were at first kind of surprised that they rated the taste of the cereal more highly, more tasty, if it had a healthy sounding name. So it's Healthy Bits versus Sugar Bits. And that might be because of their expectations based on the name. But perhaps the more important finding for this study is that when you put a character on the box, it doesn't matter. They don't seem to be making judgments based on the healthy or sugary sounding name anymore. They like it, right? It's got a character, and they actually rated the taste of the cereal highly if it had one of those Happy Feet penguins on it. I'm going to let Matt tell you briefly about where his prior work on this topic fed into our current study, too.
So I'm very interested in advertising, and this was a paper that I wrote and published a few years back that looked specifically at one advertising campaign that was used over the years to promote what many would consider unhealthy foods, of course, fast food, McDonald's. And the campaign that I looked at was Ronald McDonald. And this paper was an analysis of the food industry and how the food industry had to adopt and change amid criticisms that it was facing in the 1990s and the 2000s. And there was a film that came out back in, I believe, 2002 that really took a harsh look at how McDonald's was promoting its food. So I looked at Ronald McDonald, and I know a lot of people are unfamiliar with the origins of Ronald McDonald, and I find it kind of interesting. Because it speaks specifically to how McDonald's used a spokes character to attract children to its restaurants. In the 1960s, there was a children's program in Washington, D.C. called the Bozo the Clown Show that McDonald's advertised in heavily. Now, the problem happened for McDonald's when the show was unexpectedly canceled, and all of these franchise owners around the DC area all of a sudden found that they had lost their primary tool for advertising the hamburgers and fries and milkshakes to kids. So what did they do? Well, they went and they spoke directly with the person who portrayed the Bozo the Clown character. His name was Willard Scott. And if you're familiar with Willard Scott was a television personality for many years on the Today Show. And Willard Scott was the first iteration of the Ronald McDonald character. And so McDonald's used that character through the 70s, the 80s, and into the 90s to very heavily promote its food options to children. And children, of course, would pester their parents to take them to the McDonald's restaurants, where they would find such a wonderful experience, a playground, and all of these things that we're familiar with in the fast food industry. Now, fast forward to the 2000s, and the criticism was really ramping up, calling for the food industry, the fast food industry, to change its practices and to market and sell foods that are more healthy. So what did the food industry do? Well, instead of allowing for there to be any sort of regulation initiatives that impacted them, they took the self-regulation route. And so they basically devised a program called the CFBAI, which is the Children's Food and Beverage Advertising Initiative. And what McDonald's did specifically in this case is they sort of relegated the character of Ronald McDonald to the periphery. Instead of using him in their direct advertising and marketing promotional strategies, you would only see Ronald McDonald used in association with its nonprofit efforts, and that being the Ronald McDonald House charity. And to this day, you really only see Ronald McDonald associated with its charity efforts because McDonald's signed on to one of these industry self-regulation initiatives. And so the one that we really wanted to look at for our particular study was the CFBAI. Now, the CFBAI is a self-regulation program. Again, it was introduced in 2006. It guides food companies in what they're allowed to, or what they promote, which foods they promote to children who are younger than 12. When we did the study, there were 18 companies that were members of the study. There are currently 19 food and beverage companies that participate in the CFBAI. For a food product to be included as being allowed to be marketed and advertised to children younger than 12, there are certain criteria that have to be met. Those criteria are that the food has to be less than 200 calories per serving. It has to have less than 1.5 grams of saturated fat. It has to be less than or contain less than 290 milligrams of sodium. And there has to be less than 13 grams of added sugar. If the food meets all of these criteria, then according to the CFBAI guidelines, that food is allowed to be marketed to children who are younger than 12. Well, of course, the question becomes, well, what kind of marketing and what kind of advertising are we talking about here? We know that they can only market their products in certain ways. And according to the CFBAI, it's limited to how they market specifically using media, advertising, television, radio, and those types of approaches. What the CFBAI does not speak to is point of sale marketing tactics. And so we were very interested in looking at how point of sale is impacted by these types of regulations. Are these companies applying the same standard at the point of product sale as they would be to an advertisement that they would put in a children's program, for example? The CFBAI contains only large name brand manufacturers. So one thing you won't find in these initiatives are smaller generic brands. So we were very interested in, well, what does this mean for generic brands? Are generic brands also following these standards? And if they're not, should they be? And so the questions boil down to this basically. Are the guidelines that are laid out in the CFBAI, are they sufficient for promoting healthy products to children? And then, as I referenced, do the manufacturers apply them at the point of sale using their product packaging and the tactics that they use on the product packaging in the same way as they would in their advertising using media? Trying to advance that slide, Sarah, can you try that? There we go. So I want to talk a little bit about what we did for this particular study. Basically, what we are examining are the rates of child-oriented promotional features on cereal packaging. And in just a second, I'm going to show all of the different items that we were looking for in order to be included in our assessment. The other thing we did is we assessed whether the rates vary by the sugar content of the cereal. And we looked at it two ways. We looked at it first as an amount of sugar per suggested serving. And then also we looked at it in a bit of a nuanced way, a new way. We looked at it as sugar per ounce. And we were very interested in testing whether child-oriented promotion and sugar relationships vary with participation in the CFBAI. So if the company participates, how does that impact whether or not they promote on the packaging using some of these tactics? So what we did is we went to Walmart here in High Point, North Carolina, and then we also went to another grocery store and we bought every single box of cereal and bag of cereal in the store. As I'm sure you can imagine, we got some interesting looks from some of the people who were working at the cash register as we loaded up, I believe, Sarah, was it 5 baskets of cereal, and we loaded them into, I believe, 4 different vehicles.
Yeah, at least.
Imagine our offices looked kind of crazy there for a few months as we did our content analysis. We ended up with 12 brands and 7 manufacturers, so that would have been name brands and also generic brands. And the method we used was a content analysis. And what we were looking for were the point of sale promotional features that were aimed specifically at children. And in addition to collecting that information, we also collected the data around serving size in grams, the total sugar contained in grams per serving size, and then the suggested serving size in cups. We had 3 coders who helped us as we analyzed our cereal boxes. We looked at every single side of the box, so the top, the bottom, both side panels, the front and the back. And what we were looking for were games and activities, prizes, mascots, and I'll talk in just a second about what we call a mascot and a spokes character. We also looked at the cereal itself. Of course, we didn't open the cereal. We looked at the picture of the cereal on the box to look to see if there were any fun shapes, fun colors, and then also whether or not the boxes contained any images of animals or images of children. These were all cues that children would see as indicating to them that this particular food product was for them. This is a food product that they would enjoy. So the content analysis, we did not code for the number of times each of these appeared on the box. So for example, if there were two separate instances of a mascot, that was simply coded as yes, we noticed this as being on the box. We did not count the number of instances. We did establish intercoder reliability. And on this particular box here, this will give you sort of an example, this Trix cereal. You'll notice that the Trix mascot is there. The rabbit would be the mascot. The trolls would be what we would call the spokes character because they're from a movie. And then the cereal, of course, has a kid-friendly color. It's very colorful, and then it has an interesting shape. And then if you flip the box over, you'll notice on the back there is a game. So just on this one box of Trix cereal, you'll notice several of the different criteria that we were looking for in our content analysis. So how did we decide what is considered healthy and what is not? So again, the CFBAI initiative, there are some guidelines there for what they consider to be healthy enough for the product to be manufactured, or excuse me, to be advertised to children younger than 12. Our question is, well, is that truly healthy? So the first metric that we used was the Women, Infants, and Children's Food Assistance Program guidelines. In order for Americans to purchase products using this program, and specifically, of course, we're interested in ready-to-eat cereal, the cereal has to have less than 6 grams of sugar. So for us, that was our cut point. We said if it has less than 6 grams of sugar, we're going to consider that one of the more healthy options.
And that's
a couple of guidelines that we looked at. I'm sorry, Sarah, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, sorry, I just want to say that 6 grams of sugar per ounce of cereal for WIC.
Yeah, thank you. We also looked at the American Heart Association recommendations. The American Heart Association recommends that people consume less than 25 grams of sugar per day. And then if you look at the dietary guidelines for Americans in general, overall, less than 10% of our total calorie consumption within a given day should be from added sugar. So we use these three metrics to help us as we establish our cut points for what we would consider to be a low, a moderate, and a high sugar cereal. So the purpose of our study, we were interested in asking this question: are the guidelines that are established by the CFBAI initiative for what's allowed to be marketed and advertised to children, does that match up with what the health advocates are actually pushing for? And so that's one of the main questions that we wanted to ask. And then subsequently, we also wanted to examine whether or not the information that's on the box, is that information sufficient enough for parents to make healthy, educated decisions when they are making point of sale decisions about what they're going to purchase when they're in the grocery aisle. So those are the two main purposes for our study. And Sarah, I'm going to turn it back to you to look at our sample.
Great, thanks. Yes, so we ended up with a sample of 159 cereal boxes. And you can see here, there's a lot of numbers here, but you can see that there's a range of the big manufacturers that you're probably familiar with, Junior Mills, Kellogg's, and so on. And then generic brands and smaller brands that wouldn't be covered under the CFBAI. So Harris Teeter was one of the grocery stores we went to, Nature's Path, and Walmart, generic brands. And you can see across the top there that there are some extra designations there that we haven't really mentioned yet. So, and they're going to come into play with our analyses. It turns out that the CFBAI, in the last few years at least, the manufacturers will issue lists. They will actually publish lists of the cereals in this case that these cereals explicitly meet the criteria to advertise to kids. So these are okay to advertise to kids. So they will explicitly give this list and show, yes, they meet the criteria. So that's what this second column after total means. CFBAI, so the cereal manufacturers in that program, and they have listed that given cereal as meeting criteria. We had 17 of those. We also had a bulk of products that were made by those CFBAI companies, so General Mills, Kellogg's, and so on, but they weren't appearing on those lists where they said, yes, these are okay, we can advertise these to kids. Yet they should still fall under the guidelines that these manufacturers adhere to for the CFBAI. So we kind of made that distinction. And then, of course, are the companies not covered by that program? So the generics and the really small brands. We categorize those cereals as just not in the CFBAI. And part of what we want to see is, are they also following these regulations? You can see after we listed the manufacturers, we've got the suggested serving in gram. And those letters, those different letters, mean that the ones that are listed, the CFBAI cereals where they listed them as meeting criteria, they had statistically smaller serving sizes in grams. And that's not necessarily nefarious, it just means that those are lighter density cereals on average compared to those that weren't listed as meeting children specific requirements and those by the generic brands. So I just wanted to point that out. And then we look at the sugar per suggested serving in grams down there, and at the very bottom, that's our standardized measure. How much sugar in an ounce of cereal? So we calculated that for each box. How much sugar is there in an ounce of cereal? So that's our sample. For the findings, I'm going to kind of walk you through our key findings, and I'll go over three things. First of all, since the CFBAI guidelines refer only to the amount of sugar by serving size, we evaluated the extent to which those serving size kind of designations of low, moderate, and high sugar per serving, does that map on pretty evenly to a standardized way of looking at low, moderate, and high sugar per ounce, right? So is the serving size sugar really mapping onto the sugar per ounce, which you'd expect if they're really, if it's really doing what it intends to do. Next, I'm going to show you those eight features that Matt told you about, the mascots and the games. How much were we seeing those features, and did that vary by sugar? And then finally, the kind of crux of our findings gets a little more complicated, but we look at the average number of features on each box based on the sugar metrics and whether or not the degree of participation in the CFBAI program. So first, how much do the designations of sugar per serving map onto what we consider low, moderate, and high sugar per ounce? Across the top there, that's sugar per suggested serving. We use the industry kind of guideline to help us make those designations. The CFBAI considers 13 grams of sugar to be too high to advertise to kids, so we called that high sugar. Moderate, we called 9 to 12 grams of sugar per serving. 9 grams of sugar represents about 2 1/4 teaspoons. Oh man, I better speed this up a little bit. And then low is 8 grams or less. And then sugar per ounce, we kind of use the WIC guidelines to make those designations. Here you can see that the bulk of the products which are low sugar per serving are also low sugar per ounce. So 72% of low sugar per serving cereals also matched up with our designation of low sugar per ounce. Where you see a little bit more concern is in that moderate designation. So the moderate, the 9 to 12 grams of sugar per serving, more than half of those, based on our guidance from outside health organizations, we would consider high sugar per ounce cereals. And then the high sugar per ounce cereals, half are moderate, or sorry, per serving, half are high sugar per ounce. So already you can see this is maybe what's on the label might be a little tricky for parents to make quick sense of and guide their decision making. Here are 6 of the 8 codes that we looked for. 2 of them are not on this list. So spokes character is not on here, and prizes, giving prizes and giveaways, is not on here. And that's because we found them so rarely. I think only 2 boxes each had a spokes character and two boxes or less had a prize. So not even enough to put on this graph. On the other hand, we see games and activities and those mascots, the Tony the Tigers, the Toucan Sams, those are a lot more common, especially on the highest sugar per ounce cereals. So 62% of high 9 grams, more than 9 grams of sugar per ounce of cereal, more 62% of them have games, for example. We also added up how many different promotions there were per box. So they could have zero child promoting features, or they could have all eight. And we found that the highest sugar per ounce cereals tended to have more different kinds of features as well. They had between 2 and 3 different features meant to appeal to kids on average, which was more than the moderate and the low sugar per ounce cereals. So each individual feature is appearing more often, and they're bigger range of features are appearing on the highest sugar cereals. So the last set of findings gets a little bit complicated, but it's really the crux of our findings. So again, we looked at those designations across the rows. You're seeing the CFBAI cereals that are listed, those 17 cereals explicitly listed as these meet the criteria, we can promote these to kids, versus in the program but not listed, versus the bottom row, which is the company is not participating in the initiative at all. A few things to point to, and then the values represent the average number of different child promoting features per box. So in the low, this is sugar per serving, in the cereals with the lowest sugar per serving cereals, those that are listed as meeting the criteria, they don't make any effort to promote to kids at all. There were zero promotional features on the lowest sugar per serving cereals, even in those that are listed as being healthy for kids. Whereas the moderate sugar per serving, there's a lot, right? There's 3 to 4 different child-oriented features on each box. And this pattern kind of holds across the different categories as well. So very little attempt to appeal to kids in the low sugar per serving, and it higher, especially for the moderate and higher levels of sugar per serving. But what we are especially interested in, again, is the standardized way of looking at sugar content. So when we look at sugar per ounce, now that's what this chart recommends. When we look at the sugar content per ounce of cereal, what does this pattern look at? And we see a very linear progression in that across each of these three categories of cereals, whether it's listed by the CFBAI participating at all or not even in the CFBAI, as the sugar content per ounce of cereal grows, so does the number of child promoting features on the box. And you can see the highest sugar per ounce cereals that are listed. These are cereals that they've said, these are good for us to advertise to kids. They meet the guidelines. There's 11 of them. They're in the top right corner. Those 11 cereals have between 3 and 4, the high sugar cereals have 3 to 4 promotional cues meant to appeal to kids. Okay, so what do we take away from all of this? Well, when we're looking first from kind of a policy angle, when we're looking at the specific promotional features on cereal packaging, we found it kind of heartening that we aren't seeing the spokes characters so much here, and we're not seeing the prizes. And those are, you know, math studies an example, those are techniques that have gotten pushback from health advocates, and industry has, you know, taken some heat for using those. So it could be that they are hearing that and reducing the use of these appeals to kids. On the other hand, games and activities and, you know, cute mascots are very, very common, and particularly on objectively, you know, in the standardized metric, pretty sugary cereal. so the statement I put up on the screen, this is from the CFBAI. So while it looks like they are voluntarily applying the same metric that they use for TV advertising to the packaging, they are following the sugar per serving guideline, we're not really sure that it's reflecting the spirit of what this initiative is meant to do. Are they really promoting more healthy cereals, at least where sugar is concerned? We found very little effort to promote low sugar cereal options. So maybe instead of putting Toucan Sam on Froot Loops or Tony the Tiger on Frosted Flakes, they should be putting these things on more healthy cereals and try to get kids interested in those. On a more basic level, a standardized metric, it's kind of hard to wade through this, even in a research project, the different metrics that are used. And so something that's more standardized on the box would make this these decisions easier for parents. And in the spirit of talking to a nutrition educator audience, we did a little thinking about parent education. We know, we looked at prior research, we know that more health-focused, more well-educated consumers are likely to consult the nutrition label more so than other consumers. And yet our study and others kind of indicate maybe just glancing at the nutrition label is not going to be enough here to make the right call, to decide what's actually healthy for yourself or your child. Just to give you kind of a tale of three labels, I found three labels of cereals in our sample. The first one on the left there has 11 grams of sugar. Things on there. Oops, sorry. 11, 13, and 12 grams per serving, right? So I always like to out my husband, who's a physician, and his go-to rule is it's got to have less than 10 grams of sugar to buy it for our kids. But even he was guilty of not looking at the serving sizes suggested for the cereal. And so if you bring your calculator into the cereal aisle and you did some math on these three, you'd find that the lowest, you know, what looks at first glance like the lowest sugar content is in fact in the middle. And the middle one there on the right, the sugar, the 12 grams, sorry, of sugar per serving is actually by far the highest at 18 grams of sugar per cup if you did that calculation. Now again, weight comes into play here with cereals. They set the suggested serving sizes based on how much cereal people tend to eat of these different weights. So if you, the bottom red number there is the grams of sugar per grams of cereal. And there we see even a different story emerging. So this is not a real quick and easy benchmark. You know, the label doesn't give us a clear benchmark. So education opportunity here to help parents develop their own benchmarks that they can kind of compare and contrast in the cereal aisle without spending 3 hours with a calculator. And probably ideally that benchmarking would take into account what their child, him or herself, typically consumes. Also, we want to encourage parents not to rely on child-oriented features like, oh, these have all these characters on it, this must be okay for kids. I think sometimes as parents, we can be, I know I can be a little overly trusting of those cues as well. In terms of educating children a little bit, I dug back a little bit through my child development. And, you know, it's true that there's no magic button here that if we just tell kids X, Y, and Z, they will suddenly be impervious to marketing. It's very powerful, and kids need to develop through a series of cognitive developments to really be able to evaluate products based on their merits. So they have to understand not just that ads are meant to get them to buy things, but that ads can be deceptive and what people's motives are. So I still think that early discussions of advertising goals, of their strategies, of the importance of healthy foods could be helpful in training them a little earlier, possibly, and setting those healthy habits for life for them. I don't know if we might be out of time for our future research plans, but we're happy to talk about that if there is some interest. We'd like to follow up with another batch of cereal now that there have been some changes in the policies from the FDA and also possibly from the CFBAI. And we would like to look at how different, totally sets of different cues on boxes might be appealing to parents, and whether things like, oh, it's organic, it's heart healthy, we're using real cinnamon, whether those kind of appealing statements actually correspond to health value of cereals. All right. We did get references if you're interested, and we welcome any comments and questions.
Thank you so much. If people want to put questions that they have in the chat box, or in the question box rather, please do that. So one of the first questions that we had is, what happened with the 159 boxes of cereal after the study?
That's a good question. Yeah, I gained about 20 pounds. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, we didn't eat them. We donated them to a local food bank. So we made sure that they ended up in good hands.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So as you are talking to parents, trying to navigate this process, what would you tell them is the the easiest way to make a decision when buying a box of cereal?
Yeah, that's tough. As a parent myself, I have changed. This isn't really an answer to that question, I guess, but I have personally been paying more attention now because of the study, which just goes to show you how much detail you need to kind of uncover to really be well educated on this. I don't know, Matt, do you have a, I think standing, taking the time to kind of assess how much cereal your child tends to eat, seeing how well that matches up to the serving size, and maybe doing a little bit of homework before you get to the cereal aisle might be one way to go here.
Matt? And I would add any strategies that you can use to avoid the cereal aisle altogether would be helpful for parents, maybe not having the kiddos along or looking at online ordering options, anything that keeps the kids out of the cereal aisle, where they're not even exposed to these messaging cues, you know, could certainly be helpful.
If you can shop without your kids, it is nice. I remember when my kids were little, telling them that sugar couldn't be in the first ingredient. It didn't count as a cereal, at least for most of the time. So someone said, just a comment, serving sizes are confusing because most people think they are recommended, but the sizes on the label are actually reference amounts based on what people actually eat, not recommendations on what they should eat. And they provided a link to see for that. So another thing is thinking through this, do you think it is best for the industries to self-regulate themselves as you were exploring their self-regulations, or would you suggest that more state or federal level regulations are needed?
I think that the answer to that question sort of varies by industry. If you look at the fast food industry, I think we can probably identify some things that that they've done very well in terms of offering healthier options. If you go and you buy, for example, a Happy Meal or something like that for kids, there's now options for food items that aren't fried, that are grilled, fruits, milk, things like that. In terms of advertising, you won't see these types of advertising initiatives, at least the way, you know, I was exposed to them as a kid, you won't see that type of thing. But I think within the cereal industry, we've exposed, and I'll let Sarah talk to this a little bit more, but I think we've exposed an opportunity maybe for a second look at whether or not these initiatives are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. Sarah, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I think that there's some oversight, at least, or some input beyond just the industry itself. I think that there isn't a great way to enforce it, and it relies on outside researchers looking at, you know, objectively at compliance. Yeah, I think it wouldn't hurt to have at least more oversight, if not an outside guideline. That I just think it's the unstandardized way it's addressed. It's not in the spirit of what this initiative claims to be doing.
So then another, or actually I think the same person added, the FCT regulates advertising, which CFBAI focuses on circumventing, whereas FDA regulates packaging, which is your focus. You show how the industry can play the game different ways and different venues for this reason, and it's really something to think about, so thank you. So then another question, did you spend any time considering how these cereals are advertised to children via TV commercials or ads?
We didn't hear, no, and that has been looked at. I can't remember when the last study would have come out about TV ads, but there's
2009 around there, I think, Sarah.
Proportionately more research done on advertising to kids on TV is my understanding. And in part because this CFBAI doesn't apply to packaging, you know, we are especially interested in that element. Yeah. So no, we didn't hear. We didn't even look at any other advertising for this.
You are right, though. There's quite a bit of work that does look at that. So thank you so much for sharing your work. I know this was really, it's always interesting to me to think about how people make their food purchasing decisions and the role kids play in that, and how important it is when we think about how products are positioned towards kids. So thank you for sharing your work and your expertise. And at this time, I can hand it back over to Rachel.
Yeah, to say, we do have a few minutes. Did you want to share about your future research?
Yeah, sorry, I was looking at my slide count and not my phone for the time, and I thought I was running way over. Yeah, we can go back a couple slides. Matt, did you want to?
Yeah, sure, I can talk about this a little bit. So I mentioned earlier that in 2000, in January of this year, the FDA's revised RAC recommendations went into effect, and it increased the recommended amount customarily consumed. And as one of our participants in this panel noted, that reflects what people actually are consuming when they eat. So back in the 1990s, the amount that they were customarily consuming was lower than what we're seeing consumed now. So our sample was gathered, of course, in 2018 under the old RAC recommendations. The new RAC guidelines are in effect now. So it would be really interesting for us to go back and recollect a new sample, do the same analysis. And the reason for that is because according to the FDA's RAC guidelines, and we take this directly from the 2016 criteria that were published then, of course, they didn't go into effect until 2020, but it said with fewer sugary cereals that would meet the CFBAI's advertising criteria, fewer would be marketed to children, and companies would reduce the sugar content of popular cereals to enable them to be marketed to children. So we think it would be really fascinating to see whether or not that has actually come to fruition following the these new guidelines being implemented earlier this year. And then Sarah alluded to this a little bit on this slide. So our focus mainly focused on these cues that attract kids to a product. Well, there's messaging cues on products that attract adults as well. And so we'd be really interested in looking at some of these messaging cues, like, you know, this product is organic or it's heart healthy and it contains healthy ingredients like fiber and calcium, or it's made with real foods. We think it'd be really interesting to apply some of these same analyses to these other types of cereals that use messaging strategies aimed at a very different audience. Sarah, do you have anything to add there?
No, coding the same way we did the coding of child-oriented features, look for some of these cues meant to appeal to parents and make it sound healthy, see if it really corresponds to difference of the nutritional value of the cereal. Maybe extend it and do some reaction studies and see how parents actually interpret or consumers actually interpret some of these kind of vague but healthy sounding cues would be interesting as well.
And I would say too, we looked primarily at sugar. You know, obviously these foods have a lot of other, what we would call, you know, unhealthy ingredients. So it'd be interesting to look, for example, at, you know, fat and sodium and some of these other ingredients that appear in these cereals, and not just look at sugar, look at some of the additional ingredients as well.
Yeah, sorry for rushing that before.
Oh, no problem. So yeah, thank you for adding that. So interesting. Thank you for presenting today. Just a reminder to everyone, when I close the webinar, there's a short survey and we appreciate your feedback. And then watch for an email on Wednesday that has the recording and the CEU certificate that you're earning. We are at the end of the Journal Club for this semester. Kristen is actually working with SNEB's research division on a research methods series starting in the spring. So watch for that announcement. And we do have one more SNEB webinar yet in December. That's next week. So Check the SNEB website. We also actually have a pretty busy webinar schedule starting in January. So take a look at that schedule as well, and hope to see you back on an SNEB webinar soon. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.